Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning. How are you, lurking conservatives? Good morning to you, gentle people. I want to say good morning to the gentle people, Mark Riley.
None of them are up yet, are they?
I know they might be up. They might be up sipping their tea already, the gentle people.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of gentle people underneath the great progressive tent, my friend. As I noticed this gentle people thing when I was in Hawaii, and I've noticed them before. Like, you go hiking. If you go hiking, me and my wife are hiking in Hawaii, and then you just come upon those nice people that are dressed all in beige, no high fashion, sort of soft people. They look like the human personification of kittens. You know, they're just like, hello,
and we're
like,
yeah, but they probably just finished walking 150 miles to get to where you're hiking.
No, these are the nice, gentle souls. That's what they're the ones that are, they just sort of blend into the landscape. You know what I mean? So what, Kalo, you've been up all night, you went to see Coldplay last night, and how was that?
It was fantastic.
Really? Did you check inside your pants?
Yes, I still had a penis afterwards.
Oh, my God.
So it was good, though?
Yes, it was very good. They played until like 11 o'clock, so I'm like wiped out. I got home at like 1 o'clock in the morning.
So you got like no sleep?
I got an hour and a half.
You're not to be trusted on the air. That's what that is.
Yes. Keep me off mic.
Yeah, the little wall between, should I say that? And I said it, is gone.
Well, that guy's out of here. He's napping.
But wait, so what are you telling me about my iPod Mini now?
Your iPod is obsolete.
Wait, I'd like to rephrase that. Can I phrase that, please? I'd like to say it's a collector's item. It's a classic. What do you mean it's obsolete? So now they got a new thing?
They got a new thing called a Nano.
A Nano?
Yeah.
And it's as big as a pencil or something?
It's as wide as a pencil.
So what, now I've got this clunker, I've got the Betamax of iPods?
Yes.
They couldn't have told that to me 2 months ago? They couldn't have said, hey, maybe you might not want to buy this one. Why am I always the idiot? And on top of that, I had trouble with the iPod Mini.
Yeah, no, and at that point, they should have been like, look, dude, just wait.
Now
yeah, wait a couple
exactly.
months.
Well, that would have been nice. I hate them. I hate Apple. Here, open up the doors, iRiver. I'm coming in. Look, folks, tomorrow, big day. We'll be at the New School tomorrow. We'll have former Senator Bob Kerrey and The Daily Show Stephen Colbert. We're going to be in the same theater that once housed the Inside the Actor Studio. It's the Tishman Auditorium at the New School on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. That's tomorrow from 6 to 9 a.m. It should be good. Sarah Jones is going to be there also to do some theatrical work.
All right.
She's a great performer. We are going to, look, folks, we made this big announcement yesterday that we have an announcement. We made an announcement that we had an announcement today. It's a major, guy, we're all a little punchy.
How did that happen?
Both of my alarm clocks went dead this morning. I overslept. I think the jet lag's just catching up with me from the two time zones. Brendan McDonald just walked in. I don't even know what's going on now. All right. Well, look, the major announcement that we were supposed to have today has been postponed until next week. It's being vetted by the proper authorities, so you have to stay tuned, and we'll tell you what
proper authorities? Yes, immigration?
We'll tell you, we'll tell you more once it's been cleared. Yeah, apparently, what is it, Brendan?
Look, I fear that people out there are going to think this is some kind of bait and switch, but this is completely beyond our control. We had this announcement to make, and it just kind of snowballed and got so big that we were told we can't say it. We cannot say it.
So, too big to say?
Yes.
This is radio.
This was my argument yesterday. I mean, I took meetings all day. I was freaking out. But apparently this announcement is too big. But
too
I
raw.
Was assured that it will happen next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday?
Yes.
That's a weird day. So not even Monday.
No, I can't do anything about that.
Dude, show is like that girl in high school that you know, kind of hinted that you could like get get some, but like never happened. But
somewhat.
So, are you saying ultimately that maybe the fascination, the crush, will wear off by next week?
Yes.
No. This is going to be big, and it's very.
It better be.
But I'm afraid that this seems this is going to undermine the fact that it is such a big announcement.
Oh, yeah.
I'm afraid people are going to think that we're trying to manufacture bigness by saying, well, we were going to announce it today, but we're putting it off because it's so big. No, it just is so big they wouldn't let us say it.
It's not only big, and not just the announcement is big, but what it represents is going to change the face of this show for months to come.
And maybe the face of New York City.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that to be true.
Change the face of New York City?
What the heck is going on?
I don't know. Don't worry, man. You don't even know where you are right now. You're like an hour's sleep. You're like hallucinating.
You could change the face of New York City.
Oh, it's going to be big, my friend. That's right. It's going to be
big.
And
it's coming up Tuesday.
Let me give you a hint.
Tuesday.
No more
Next
New York
Tuesday.
Yankees. Morning sedition Yankees. does that mean anything to anybody?
Maron's going to be the manager. They're firing Joe Torre.
That's could you imagine being a baseball manager? So what does the guy in between second and third do? The guy with the mitt between second and third, he does what? How come there's not one between first and second? You know what? Let's put a guy between first and second as well. That just seems fair. So here we go. Let's talk about some news. Yesterday, Democratic members of Congress, Gerald Nadler and John Conyers, Mel Watt, Sheila Jackson Lee, i.e. the good people, announced they will introduce legislation to protect thousands of families and small businesses in the aftermath of Katrina. These are the victims of not only the storm, but victims of the culmination of Republican oversight and incompetence in disaster management. And they are going to try to protect them from being penalized under evil Republican policy, i.e. the Bankruptcy Abuse Prevention and Consumer Protection Act of 2005, which goes into effect on October 17th, which makes it almost impossible for people to declare bankruptcy. Now, this is a nice thing, Riley. This is a good thing. This is an amendment that was suggested initially when they were designing the legislation. This is something that Representative Jackson Lee offered an amendment to protect victims of natural disaster during the consideration of this act, and it was shut down by a party line vote immediately.
Yeah, I bet you they might reconsider now.
Yeah, well, that's the plan, right? This is to provide these people with at least some freedom to recoup some of their losses.
Yeah, individuals and small businesses who are going to take a tremendous, tremendous hit. In terms of the question of whether or not they have insurance, the question of whether or not they're ever going to be able to come back and reopen their small businesses, all of these are very big issues. And, you know, there had been up until, well, actually until October 17th, there was the protection of bankruptcy if everything else failed.
Yeah. So now it's like it's there are some things that are being, you know, there's some surprising things being done. This one is not so surprising, but three truckloads of high-end fashion clothing that was seized by government agents for violating import quotas was sent to the Astrodome yesterday for distribution. You know, I always wonder what happens to that, because you hear about these trade, not embargoes, but when people break tariff laws or whatever, that there's tons and tons of clothing that comes over from China, Indonesia, probably made in sweatshops, who knows, but not necessarily when they are made in China. But what's happened now is apparently the government sells them or they give them away. There's about 100,000 items with labels like FUBU and Code Blue. Doesn't necessarily mean they are actually that brand. So the items were given to the Red Cross and to a local church organization for distribution. Apparently, one church is actually taking orders and sending out personal shoppers to fill the orders. And I could just see that one. Please, no knockoffs. Could you not give me the knockoffs? Give me the real stuff. Apparently, if Barbara Bush would have went to the Astrodome a couple days later, maybe she could have picked something up for her grandkids.
Yeah, they got nice colors there. This is, I mean, look, this is at least putting something that the government would ordinarily, in many cases, they destroy this stuff. So at least they're putting this to good use. The whole FUBU and, you know, stylishness aside, at least they're trying to do something with material that might not otherwise be used.
My wife called me and asked me what I didn't need in my closet. I got that call yesterday from, do you ever wear this jacket, the raincoat? And I'm like, why? I can't, no. So I don't know what's left of my clothing in L.A.
Have any.
Yeah, my wife sent it to the Hurricane Relief Organization. Later in the show, we are going to tell you a little bit about, you know, which, if you're thinking about giving money or clothing or whatever, there are some things you got to look out for in making donations, especially over the Internet. There's a lot of scams out there. We're going to tell you a little bit about that in just a few minutes about how to avoid those scams. Also, we're going to get into a little bit of the history of what the hell went wrong with FEMA and why Michael Brown not only has to be fired, he should be probably indicted for something if I can figure it out. But good morning to you. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. It's 15 past the hour. Stay with us.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests are comedy. Your blog. morningsedition.com. Air America Radio.
Past the hour. Good morning. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yo.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Tomorrow we'll be at the New School on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue from 6 to 9 a.m. You can come down. We're going to be in the Tishman Auditorium with The Daily Show, Stephen Colbert, former Senator Bob Kerry, performance artist Sarah Jones will be there. We'll have all the characters down there. It's going to be a big show.
Yeah.
Very excited about that. If you want to podcast Morning Sedition, you can go to morningsedition.com. And learn more about that. It's the only way that you will be able to hear us on the West Coast. I'm not going to be bitter anymore. No more bitterness. But I got wind of something on the email yesterday that they might be pulling us in Seattle and pushing us back into the middle of the night. I guess we'll find out from you listeners, because apparently that no one's going to send us an in-house email. But that aside, no bitterness, please. In just a few minutes, I'll be telling you about what to look out for in terms of scams when it comes to charitable donations. But right now, let's talk about Michael Brown there, Riley. Michael Brown, this is a guy that certainly should take the hits. They're probably going to let him take the hits. If he's deflecting the more in-depth investigation into all the policies that culminated into the disaster that is the disaster relief operation, I don't think they'll fire him, because they don't fire anybody.
Well, see, what we're seeing now, what we're beginning to watch take shape before our very eyes, yeah, is the political response to Katrina.
Yeah.
That was done in part yesterday when Republican leadership in the House and Senate decided to hold joint hearings, a joint investigation, it's rather than a single House and then a single Senate investigation.
Why don't you explain the difference to me of what that means? Because yesterday, it was going to be a single House and a single congressional investigation.
Originally it was going to be a House and a Senate investigation.
Okay, so it was a House and a Senate investigation, which would have convoluted things a little bit.
It would have made it a little bit more difficult for the Republicans, because you might have had stuff coming out of both investigations simultaneously.
See, my big fear is that all of this stuff is going to be lost into a strange, prolonged, bureaucratic, committee investigation. That, what needs to be done now. People need to react now, because we already know what the hell went wrong. But what does a joint investigation mean? Right?
Well, it means that both houses of Congress will be doing the investigating, and I think what it means do politically is extend Michael Brown's life as head of FEMA. See, with individual investigations, there would have been double the pressure for him to step the hell down.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've got a joint investigation engineered by Republicans, and the likelihood is they will criticize it. They will certainly criticize him. And if they have to criticize, if they have to choose between criticizing Michael Chertoff, who's the head of Homeland Security, or Michael Brown, the head of FEMA, they're going to choose Brown.
Well, they should absolutely. I think they should fire both of them. But again, as we know, this is an administration that doesn't fire anybody, does not admit that it's done anything wrong, doesn't take responsibility for their actions, will go to blame, seek to blame everybody. And FEMA, at one time was a great agency in terms of what it was capable of doing. But in before we talk essentially about FEMA, let's listen to Nancy Pelosi.
Oh, yeah.
Senator Nancy Pelosi, House Minority Leader. Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi is very outspoken and was at a press conference yesterday, and she had a conversation with President Bush and was critical of him to his face, and this is what she had to say.
When I said to the president that he should fire Michael Brown, he said, why would I do that? I said, because of all that went wrong, with all that didn't go right last week. And he said, what didn't go right? Oblivious, in denial, dangerous.
Oblivious, in denial, dangerous. It sounds like an album. That's George Bush's next album. Oblivious, in denial, dangerous. That was Nancy Pelosi, Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi.
Let me tell you something. I would respectfully disagree with her about this.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what went wrong was calculated, and it was a calculated slap at her. on the part of the president. President knew good and damn well what went wrong.
Yeah, well, these people, not these people, but they how else do you criticize it? It's easy to say he's oblivious and he's in denial and he's dangerous. He's clearly dangerous. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's oblivious. If he's in denial, it's an enforced denial that, you know, he chooses to have this disposition because this is the protocol. This is how these guys respond to this. Any type of criticism, all they do is go, what are you talking about?
Well, this is George W. Bush doing the same thing to Nancy Pelosi as he did when he joked about Carla Faye Tucker, the woman that he executed in Texas some years
right.
back. This was essentially saying, look, you're not important enough for me to have a conversation with about what went wrong. So the best thing I can say to you is, well, what do you think went wrong?
Exactly. Let's hear what Bush had to say about Michael Brown, the head of FEMA. This was in Mississippi last week.
Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job. The FEMA director's working 24/7.
In what world is he getting applause for that?
Well, yeah, I want to know who was the audience there and why were they applauding?
So talk to me about a little bit about this, Riley. How did FEMA come ungood? Because it was, you know, it was praised in the 90s as one of the best functioning, you know, federal agencies. You know, its response to Midwestern floods in 1993, the earthquake in Northridge in 94, Oklahoma City, the terrorist attack in 95. These were, you know, these are models of disaster response.
Yeah, and what happened in 2001 is that George W. Bush was inaugurated as president and decided to turn FEMA into a patronage mill.
Right.
All right. The first guy he appoints as head of FEMA, Joe Albaugh. What were his credentials? He was Bush's campaign manager. No previous experience in disaster management. You can spell that P-R, P-A-R-T-R-O-N-A-G-E, patronage.
So what that means essentially is that these guys think that also part of the momentum was to privatize FEMA and privatize disaster relief. So if they just stick somebody, a manager in place, you know, a patronage mill, if they just stick one of their cronies in place to manage the organization and subcontract out whatever work they're supposed to be doing, you know, at the behest of the government, then that's all good with them.
Well, see, what they did was try and cast FEMA as some form of an entitlement program for cities and states. In other words, the cities and states, as FEMA begins to get a budget and the budget increases every year,
yeah.
the states are going to come hat in hand every year and say, we need. And, of course, that runs completely counter to George W. Bush's agenda, which is to keep as much money as possible out of the hands of cities and states. And he's done this in a zillion different ways. So what ended up evolving was an agency that by 2003 was downgraded from a cabinet-level position down to an agency of the Department of Homeland Security. And that was very, very deliberately done. That was after Albaugh left, by the way, and handed the gig over to Michael Brown, another guy who had no experience.
Yeah, so that's it. So you put your cronies at the head of these agencies and make them completely ineffective. And what you get is you get, a lot of dead people that shouldn't be dead.
There you go.
When we come back here in just a second, I will tell you exactly what you got to look out for when you're donating money online. And we'll also talk a little bit about, obviously, about the hurricane. So it's 27 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
Tomorrow morning we will be broadcasting live from the New School's Tishman Auditorium on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. We're going to have Senator Bob Kerry there. We're going to have The Daily Show's Stephen Colbert, performance artist Sarah Jones. It's going to be a good time. Why don't you come down? That's 6th Avenue. It's 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue, tomorrow from 6 to 9 in the morning. You know, sometimes when you read the headlines, it's hard to figure out what's really being said. So thank God we got this Wi-Fi 5000 headline translator to help us decipher what exactly it is underneath those headlines. Let's feed it some headlines. The Machine. From the Associated Press, FEMA chief sent help only when storm ended. FEMA chief sent help only when storm ended. Translation, FEMA tries innovative retroactive evacuation. All right, let's feed it again. FEMA chief sent help only when storm ended. FEMA, what does it say? FEMA hurricane relief blows. From the Seattle Times, California legislators approve same-sex marriage. California legislators approve same-sex marriage. Translation, Bush declares state disaster area. Troops move in immediately. From Associated Press, Michael Jackson writes song for Katrina victims. Michael Jackson writes songs. Song for Katrina victims. Translation, FEMA turns away pop star, says victims have enough songs. Sorry. I don't know what to tell you. What do you know? What do you got? Here we go. Look, folks, you got to be careful giving. After the tsunami killed nearly 300,000 people last year, the FBI investigated more than 170 websites that were preying on donors by mimicking sites of well-known charities. Given the tone of these running this country, scams will happen, obviously. The internet is full of cons related to relief effort. They have names like KatrinaHelp.com and KatrinaDonations.com. One group of sites, ParishDonations.com and KatrinaFamilies.com, are actually linked to this other thing called InternetDonations.com, which is connected to a white supremacist group.
Yeah.
As of yesterday, the FBI counted about 2,300 websites dealing with the Katrina disaster. Some are legit, some are not. So depending on your affiliation, some legitimate sites might be scams as well. You might not want to give to Pat Robertson's Operation Blessings if you could. But here's some warning signs, okay? Private donors should avoid giving personal data to any organization seeking disaster aid. These include Social Security numbers, dates of birth, bank account information. It's interesting that you got to keep saying this stuff because you would think that people would know better. But I'll tell you, I was in Los Angeles, and my wife and I got a phone call saying that something was up with a bank account that we had, and we went to this site, and it didn't look real to us, and we called the bank to check it out. And a lot of these things are subcontracted, so sometimes it's always better
to
check.
You never know, yeah. Definitely.
Watch out for organizations, for names of organizations that are similar to those of well-known organizations like Red Shield instead of Red Cross, or SendYourMoneyHereDummy.com.
People don't really go for that.
I do.
I'm laughing. I feel bad because I think sometimes people, when they get emotional about giving, you know, like we got our man Jason Isaac, who's here, who spent a lot of time in New Orleans.
Yeah.
He's heavily involved in trying to do some individual relief efforts.
Mm-hmm.
We have a situation here in New York where people are actually being invited to a free concert, and all they have to do is bring items from a list that people can use.
Yeah, and it's,
you know, those sorts of things.
And also, sometimes you just get deceived. It's like an illusion. You know, you see the you see that the articles, or that you see that the site, it looks like it. They manufacture the light, and you don't even think about it.
What scumbag does that?
Yeah, you know, a lot of them.
A lot of them.
You know, and people...
Greedy scumbags, Chris.
Well, you know what, Chris? It's like, why would... You know, the administration does that. I mean, the tone has been set by these guys to profiteer off of people's disaster. I mean, that is what this administration is about. This administration is a bunch of scam artists. They're putting people's lives in danger all the time through their policy. So why wouldn't the tone of the country be like that? But there's always scumbags. Doesn't matter who. In general, don't respond to emails soliciting donations. Legitimate charitable groups generally avoid that approach. Don't give to any intermediary organizations that say they will make the donation for you. Don't give to organizations that require a fee for charitable services, like locating a family member caught in a disaster. Okay. Also, avoid giving to websites that end in .com. Most nonprofit organizations use .org. So if you want to check this stuff out, if you have a question about one of these websites or about where you can donate, there are two sites that actually do the homework for you and tell you whether or not they're legit. www.charitywatch.org. And www.charitynavigator.org are the two sites that deal with that. Some other public service announcements. Ford Motor Company recalled 3.8 million pickup trucks and sports utility vehicles for cruise control switches suspected of causing fire. This is the fifth largest auto industry recall in history.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, this is a great example. This is a great example of what happens when, you know, a company cannot deny that something's wrong. If a company is recalling something, something's really wrong, because they make concessions. You know, if it's not that bad, if it's not killing too many
people. Acceptable risk.
And that's exactly what happened in New Orleans with the FEMA, with how the administration dealt with the possibility of this happening.
Yeah, and Toyota apparently is recalling some vehicles as well. Now, I don't feel so bad about this because, you know, SUVs and trucks like this, get the worst gas mileage of almost any vehicles that these people manufacture. But, you know, you do want to have safe vehicles on the road. See, what changed a lot of this, Mark, mm-hmm. was the Pinto situation back in the mid-1970s. Where they had that gas tank that literally exploded on impact. Somebody hit the side of a Pinto. The thing blew up and everybody in it died.
And they weren't even going to do anything about that.
No, until a bunch of people died. Yeah. And that's when they turned around and they realized that they had to retrofit those tanks so they didn't explode on impact.
Well, you know, so maybe this is a gift in disguise. If you're driving one of these vehicles, apparently the 1994 to 2002 F-150 pickup truck.
Wait. Hold up. How long?
This is from 1994 to 2002.
That's 8 years yeah. worth of trucks.
8 years worth of F-150 pickup trucks. 1997 to 2002, Ford Expeditions. 1998 to 2002, Lincoln Navigators. 1994 to 1996, Ford Broncos equipped with factory-installed speed control. Now, look, this might be a gift in disguise. Maybe it's time to get rid of that SUV. But you can go to morningsedition.com, go to the links page, and it'll link you up to where you can find out what you have to do this. They made it very complicated to find this on the Ford
website.
Yeah, they
did. Yeah. Well, they always do, because they don't want to feature the fact that that they've done something wrong at the factory that could jeopardize people. Fires in vehicles are no joke.
This sounds exactly like the administration.
Exactly.
It sounds exactly what the Republicans are doing right now in response to the criticism around how they're handling this disaster. One other public service announcement. According to a study done in Dublin, ecstasy is bad.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Don't want
those
to
of you staggering home.
don't want to ruin the party. But apparently it can cause depression, anxiety, and psychosis, or amplify existing psychological disorders. It can compromise the immune system, inviting unusual illnesses like meningitis and shingles of the eye. So I guess it's a...
Whoa!
Yeah, it's
shingles yeah, of the eye. Yeah. I didn't know you got shingles in the eye.
And really, from what I've heard, when you go to a club with shingles of the eye, it's gonna stifle your ability to really engage with other people.
Yeah.
So you got to decide: is the buzz worth it? How much do you like to dance all night? I mean, is it really worth it? Meningitis? Is it that fun?
Is that what you do ecstasy for, to dance all night?
Well, yeah, a lot of people do the rave thing. I guess it's still going on. I sound like an old guy. You know, I
am an old guy. That's why I'm asking.
I did ecstasy when it came out early.
I got off the bus.
Did you? You were off the bus already.
Off the bus before I quit all of that in 1984.
Yeah, I guess I was in college when it first came out, and I tried it twice, and then I heard things that it can drain your spinal fluid, it can do awful things.
Ooh!
As buzzes go, it wasn't horrible. You know, I spent a lot of time. It was one of those things where you're like, hey, let's go down to the basement and dance around.
Yeah.
You know, it was all right. You know, not a productive drug.
Suck on this cough drop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that was weird. That just came through the wall, didn't it, Chris? Where is he at? Oh, that was the non.
Hey, wait a minute.
I didn't know where that was going. You want to share?
Suck on that my little paws and the cough drop.
What is that rooted in some personal experience? The cough drop thing? Because he said that like it's something like, yeah, I know exactly the cough drop.
I did go to a lot of clubs where people are like, hey, you have any cough drops? I'm like, no, it's summer. Why would I have a cough drop, idiot?
And so you.
Hey, do you have a blow pop?
Yeah.
Like,
so that's right, and they like the pacifiers and stuff. Okay. Yeah, all right, yeah. I understand. I understand, Chris. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, I'll shut up.
No. I'm kidding. I love when you talk.
Maybe we need to make this into a segment, Drug Tips with Chris.
Yeah, no, that would be great, because now all the parents are driving their kids to school already. They're like, why are these guys talking about this? Let me help you out, folks. Parents, kids, if you're sitting there with your dad or your mom driving to school, drugs are bad.
That's right. Stay off the X, okay?
Stay off all drugs. Drugs, all
good
right?
Point.
Until you're old enough to try them once. See, now I'm in trouble. Is that right?
Okay. Yeah. Now you are.
Okay. Don't listen to me. What do I know? I'm just a radio personality on it. You know, there was a time in this country where part of the great progressive momentum, part of
was to get high.
Was to get high,
yeah,
to hang out.
I know.
That's all done. It's all over.
Finished.
So I want to talk about in just a minute, if we could, when we come back, is that there's an interesting thing that the government's planning on doing in terms of helping the displaced people from Katrina in all areas in Texas and in Louisiana, but they've got this plan that has never been done before. And to me, it admits, it is a great indication that they have made a tremendous mistake, and it is close as the Republicans are going to come to apologizing. I'll share that with you in just a second. It's 45 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Hi, this is Mark Maron's mom, and you're listening to my son and his friend Mark Riley. They're very good boys. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
Again, the off-mic show, very enlightening. Many drug stories have been shared. You'd be amazed at what can happen in 5 minutes. You'd be amazed. There is rumor that it might be made available to you in the future on our website. The off-mic show might be a premium subscriber privilege to listen to us off mic, but I think we'd probably stifle ourselves.
Yeah.
Hey, for those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program, or maybe not quite yet, but Will, it's time for Morning Sedition's Cliff Notes. The government is sending seized designer fashion clothes to victims of Hurricane Katrina. Three truckloads of fashion clothing seized by government agents for violating import quotas arrived at Houston's Astrodome on Wednesday, so Hurricane Katrina refugees there can put it to use, all except for the shoes. Connie gets to go through those first. Then maybe later after that they can look. Scientists say ecstasy users are more prone to disease. Ecstasy users who learned about this said, "Hey, that is so cool. You're my friend." Scientists say that taking two ecstasy tablets a night would weaken the body's defenses. Normally your body and mind will prevent you from dancing like an idiot and listening to more than 2 minutes of Paul Oakenfold. All right. Theater lovers in Afghanistan are enjoying their first taste of Shakespeare. In the past week, Shakespeare's comedy Love's Labor Lost has been performed in Kabul to packed audiences of Afghani royalty, diplomats, aid workers, residents, and, of course, local celebrity Osama bin Laden, who hasn't missed a single show. The U.S. military says that they're close to getting tickets and will bring bin Laden down. It's hard to pick up a lot of the dialogue during the performance of The Taming of the Shrew because it was muffled by the co-star's burqa. Come on. Come on. Come on. You know, there's a couple little typos on here. I had this kind of poetry there. I was filtering as I went along. So let's talk about this incredible new plan. In an unprecedented gesture, the federal government has a plan in place to begin distributing debit cards to displaced victims of Republican policy and the hurricane. Each card will have $2,000 on it to be used on food, clothing, gas, transportation, and other essentials. FEMA will be distributing the cards that are bankrolled by the Federal Disaster Relief Fund. There's $13 billion there, and this could cost in the hundreds of millions. But the interesting thing to me is that Republicans are incapable of apologizing or taking responsibility for their failure. But you know Republicans have really screwed up when they're just giving money to poor people directly. Is there any more of an indication that the Republicans are admitting that they screwed up when they're just saying, here's $2,000? I think it's a great gesture. I don't know what $2,000 can buy in this world today, but it's certainly going to help some of these people out. They have to figure out how to register these people. Apparently, they're going to go to these registration centers, and the people have to be displaced.
Yeah, they have a safeguard against fraud, but this is FEMA.
Yeah.
So you never know.
Who the hell knows? Apparently they're thinking about judging where they say the people have to tell them where they're from, what part of New Orleans they're from. Then they're going to judge that against an aerial photograph of the region.
Like the Google Maps we talked about
yesterday?
Exactly,
like a satellite, and probably even lower than that, to determine whether these people deserve it. But, obviously this is a very peculiar gesture on behalf of a Republican administration. And you know what's sad about it is that some people are already criticizing it. That kind of makes me sick, is that when you get these right-wing people who are...
Oh, I know who you're talking. You're talking about Alaska Governor Frank Murkowski.
Yes, yes.
He essentially said, now here's a quote from Frank Murkowski from Alaska.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money. The question is, how do you separate the needy from those who just want a $2,000 handout?
It's amazing how these people, this is the core of what these guys are about, that they just cannot see in any way, helping people out who need help.
Well, especially if they're black, most of them.
Black, poor, yeah. whatever, you know, whatever the case is, if they feel that these people are siphoning off the system, and to say that, to make a suggestion about that in light of this particular situation, it's inhumane. It's like it lacks, you know, character, it lacks humanity, it lacks any sort of compassion, and I guess that's what describes the Republican Party.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's just because the guy's up in Alaska and he's been, you know, spent a lot of time away from the lower 48 or something. But first of all, $2,000 is not that much money, number one.
That's exactly right.
By the way, the average person in Alaska burns through $2,000 in a week. You know, the cost of living up there is extremely high. So I don't know what he's talking about. In terms of handouts, we're talking about 230,000 displaced people. Do you think it's going to be that difficult to verify if they're in the Astrodome that they're originally from New Orleans and that they were displaced by the hurricane?
Yeah, I don't know what they're thinking. I don't know where the other centers are going to be, because in the news report that we had here, it just said in Dallas and in Houston. I imagine that if this is really going to happen, if this plan is engaged, that they will have these registration centers wherever displaced people are, or somewhere in Louisiana. You know, I had a weird, speaking about poor people in Alaska, I had a very weird moment in Alaska.
Really?
Can I share that with you?
Sure.
I went up there to do a gig. I flew into Fairbanks, Alaska. This was a few years ago. I was doing a college gig. It was many years ago, actually. And you just fly over miles and miles of tundra, man. Just wide open space. You can't see nothing. Then you get off the plane, and it's like it all seems very small and very isolated up there, though it's a big city once you get into it. And we're driving towards the college from the airport, and this woman is driving me to the gig. And there's three apartment buildings just sitting by themselves. Just little, like, five-story apartment buildings. Mm-hmm. There's nobody really around. There's no landscaping or nothing. Just three apartment buildings on the side of the road. And she points at it and goes, "That's the bad area."
That's the bad area?
These three buildings, it didn't look like anything was going on. So, look, I wanted to remind people, and I'm going to be plugging this a lot today because it is tomorrow. Our next live broadcast is tomorrow, and it's a big live broadcast. We're going to be at the New School that's over on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue in the Tishman Auditorium. We're going to have former Senator Bob Kerry. We're going to have The Daily Show's Stephen Colbert. We're going to have performance artist Sarah Jones. We're going to have Lawton Smalls. We're going to have Pendejo is going to be there. You know, for those of you who are wondering, Jim Earl, the marvelous Jim Earl, the extremely talented Jim Earl, who does the entire Milfington family, has been on vacation this week, so don't panic. I know some Milfington fans were.
He's
like,
on vacation?
Yeah.
Oh.
He's. I know. Riley's a little upset. Riley has this strange boy crush on Jim Earl.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's the part in his hair that really
is
does.
That what it is?
Yeah, that's what gets me.
I think it's just because he is like, you know, if you picture somebody who is like, if you were to make a poster that just said "so white" on it, I think Jim Earl would be there. Am I right there? Like, it's not in his behavior. He's very...
He's soulful enough as a person.
He's relatively soulful.
But he does look like the quintessential white guy.
Yeah, for what a white guy who plays a Rickenbacker guitar.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, he does.
Really?
Yeah, he's a good guitar player. So let's not drift too much, you know.
Shall we?
I'm a little disjointed today, man. I can't get around it. I don't know what the hell happened. I woke up. It was one of those nights where I woke up at like 1 in the morning, and I was up, and I was mad. You know,
oh,
I
just
couldn't
for
go
being
back.
Up.
No, I was kind of mad that I heard that we might be pushed back into the middle of the night in Seattle.
Oh, that woke you up?
Yeah, it actually woke me up.
Uh-oh.
Because I got family in Seattle. You know what I mean?
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
A big hour coming up. We're going to be talking to Anthony Romero, who is the executive director of the ACLU, about John Roberts. So stay with us. It's Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Yeah, there you go. How are you? 6 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yo.
Everybody's a little punchy today for some reason. Riley's not. He's right on top of it.
Ooh.
Chris has been up all night, so he's a little punchy. Both of my alarm clocks didn't go off, so that happened. I don't know how the hell that happened. I've got a Palm Pilot that I set to wake me up and a travel alarm clock. I got to get me a new clock.
Wait a minute. None of these were plugged into the wall, right?
No, they're both battery operated. They were both charged up. I don't know what the hell happened. It just happened. happened. All of a sudden, I had that, like, huh? You know, that where you're like, what? Oh, my God. And you go into that weird mode. My cat's freaked out. They're like, what's wrong with him? Why is he running around like this? All right, look, we have a big announcement that we were supposed to make today, but we can't because it's too big.
Too big.
We got to put it off till next Tuesday. It needs to be vetted. It needs to go through the proper channels. There are big discussions or meetings being held. Brendan P.W. McDonald was down at corporate headquarters yesterday, and I don't know. He comes up this morning. He says we can't make the announcement because what? I don't know what the hell happened.
It's so big.
I know. Huh? You make us sound like a shoddy organization. Like we had this ready to go. This announcement was ready. And at what time did I get back here yesterday? 3 o'clock. I got an email saying, don't drink coffee on the airplane. And
is that what the email said?
I usually say that into his head, but now that I'm on the mic, I'm just saying it right now. So please stop drinking coffee.
I'm sorry. I'm just learning how to do this.
All right. And yeah. The email said we're going to have to hold off because X number of things have to be finished on their end, which I responded with a furious email because you know what my mood was like yesterday.
Sure, yeah, it was bad.
And so I responded with a furious email saying, "How could you know we promoted this? We've gotten this ready. It's ready to go. It's a huge announcement." You know, and they went, sorry.
Yeah, so given the way that works down there, we should be able to probably make this announcement probably early next year.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. No, Tuesday. I got assurances, man.
Yeah, that was what I got before Thanksgiving.
I got assurances.
So that's going to happen. Thanks for keeping us up to speed on that. But those of you who live in the New York area who want to fly in, you know, I just saw an email yesterday from a woman who wants to fly in for a performance in the future. She's coming to town from, you know, all the way on the West Coast.
Yeah.
But tomorrow, you can go to the New School. The New School is at 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. We'll be at the Tishman Auditorium doing our show on stage with Senator Bob Kerrey, The Daily Show Stephen Colbert, performance artist Sarah Jones will be there. It's a great theater. If you remember the old Inside the Actor's Studio, that is the exact same stage we'll be on tomorrow. We'll have all the characters there. Lawton Smalls will be there. Pendejo will be there. Jim Earl on vacation will not be there. Johnny K Street, I believe, might stop by.
Oh, yeah?
Haven't seen Johnny K Street
in
a couple weeks.
Yeah,
because I've been on vacation. You were on vacation for a week. You grow to miss these guys. So they're all going to come down. And of course, you and I will be there. But it's going to be harder to touch Mark Riley because we will be on stage.
On stage. And Neil will be blocking anyone trying to
yeah,
do that.
Yeah, except for Franny, the 80-year-old comedy writer. I'm waiting for her to tell me exactly how old she is. I keep saying 80, and
I think
she's probably
85.
Not. Is she really?
I think she is 85.
Oh, she's the only threat to our security.
She was a school teacher, though. She taught a guy who's a very good friend of mine.
I'll get you up to speed on this. This woman comes to all of our live performances and she brings jokes. She writes puns. She's like, you should use this one. But she'll come up and she'll insist on talking to me and you cannot stop her from talking. She's a regular listener. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on down in New Orleans. As of today, Mayor Ray Nagin ordered law officers and the military late Tuesday to evacuate all holdouts by force if necessary. And apparently there has not been anybody removed by force. They're still encouraging people to go for their own safety.
Yeah, and they are a lot of people who have been, you know, who stayed through most of this.
Yeah.
Are now starting to voluntarily leave. We should say that because, you know, it makes it sound like it's an either-or situation. Either you've already left or the people that are there are going to be standing on their rooftops with shotguns waiting for these people to come. That's not the way it is. A lot of people are coming, you know, as the police and the military come to their homes and say, look, you got to go. And when they explain to them that, you know, the water that's out there you can't even touch, then people start to think about it.
That's important to understand is that these are government tests that just came out as of yesterday that the amount of sewage-related bacteria in the floodwaters is at least 10 times higher than accepted safety levels. And this is bad. You know, there's a Dr. Julie Gerberding, chief of the CDC, actually said that, you know, even stragglers, you shouldn't even touch the water.
Yeah, so don't put your hands on it. It is really that, I think, 10 times the acceptable level of bacteria.
Yeah, you know, that always happens. It's just a toxic mess down there. I understand why people wouldn't want to leave. We've talked about this before. It's a very frightening thing. I can't even imagine the amount of grief and pain and fear that's going on down there just in terms of property. There are some concessions, you know, at least attempting to be made on a policy level, which I find to be very exciting. First of all, call, you know, Gerald Nadler, who, you know, he's one of the good guys.
Yeah.
You know, he and a group of Congress people and
Mel Watt, John Conyers, Sheila Jackson Lee, and others.
Yes, they are trying to put together legislation that will enable people to sort of, you know, get around the Republican policy that is going to go into action on October 17th, the bankruptcy. What's the full title of it? Yeah, it is the Bankruptcy Abuse Prevention and Consumer Product Act of 2005, which is going to make it almost impossible for people to declare bankruptcy. So this group of Democrats announced that they are going to introduce legislation to protect thousands of families and small businesses, victims of the hurricane and the aftermath of the hurricane, also victims of Republican oversight and FEMA oversight and incompetence. They don't want them to be now penalized by evil Republican policy, which is this Bankruptcy Act, which will deny them the ability to be, you know, at least get their feet back, you know, on the ground if they lost property, lost everything they had.
Well, you know, one of the byproducts of this whole bankruptcy thing, Mark, and this is going to sound almost, I don't know, catch-22-ish.
Yeah.
Remember that the bankruptcy bill really raised the threshold. In other words, in terms of the amount of money that people had before they could actually go ahead and declare bankruptcy. In other words, you know, right now this is your assets are usually protected from bankruptcy. Under these circumstances, you if you make or if you have certain over a certain amount of assets, you then have to pay as opposed to getting those debts discharged under bankruptcy. Well, suppose your assets are in the city of New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the assets are gone, but as far as the government's concerned, you still got them on paper because they were on your last tax return.
Oh, man.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, so this is like this storm is going to affect some people for, you know, probably the rest of their lives. And, you know, what's sad to me about the bankruptcy legislation is that this is like just, you know, one of many legislations, one of many policies passed that completely is completely insensitive to the needs of people that may be in compromised situations. There's this one, there's the restricting victims' rights through tort reform, but this one is particularly heinous because it was based on the idea that frivolous lawsuits are rising, you know, are making insurance, you know, companies, you know, raise their rates. That bankruptcies are declared by people who just want a handout, as they say, as a, you know, the
nonsense.
Right, it's nonsense. Most of them occur either because of illness, divorce, or death. That, you know, that is what, you know, this is when people need money. You know, if you get sick and you don't have the proper health insurance, which is also a Republican issue, if you don't have the proper health insurance, it can break you within a year.
Yeah. Now, here's another Republican
issue. Let alone a disaster like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's one that a lot of people are starting to look at, including, by the way, Harry Reid, Senator mm-hmm. Harry Reid of Nevada. And that is, did Bush's vacation impede the rescue efforts in the immediate aftermath of Katrina? Now, that's a tough question to have to answer, because everybody deserves a vacation, obviously. But this was the president of the United States. And if you look, Mark, at the timeline that we have about what happened when in this rescue effort, you realize that George W. Bush was talking to Michael Chertoff, head of the Department of Homeland Security, on the day that Katrina, on the morning that Katrina hit landfall. You think they were talking about Katrina? No.
No.
They were talking about immigration.
And this was after. That was on, you know, on Sunday, correct?
No, this was Monday.
This was Monday.
Monday, the day that Katrina hit landfall.
That was the same day that he also shared a birthday cake photo op with Senator John McCain.
John McCain. He also went to Arizona and California.
But these aren't vacation things. This is a president going about his business, even though he's on vacation. He's going about his business promoting his new Medicare policy. He's running around playing guitar with a country music musician.
That was the next day. That was Tuesday.
This is after the landfall. This is after the hurricane hit. So of course his vacation impeded, but obviously there was more impeding. This was a guy that just didn't care. This was a guy that didn't realize that the guy he picked, Michael Chertoff, the guy that Chertoff was working with, Michael Brown at FEMA, were completely ineffectual. This timeline is amazing. You can link to it on morningsedition.com if you go to the links. We pulled it off of the internet.
Yeah, but I think it was the Center of American Progress. Yeah. Center for American Progress.
But it's an amazing timeline because it really lays out on a day-to-day basis what the administration was doing and what was happening, you know, as each day of the not only the hurricane but the aftermath of the hurricane unfolded. And nobody still, they're barely snapping into action now. They got firefighters from around the country just sitting around waiting to do something because they had all these guys volunteer, they had all these guys fly in, and a lot of them are just sitting around in hotels and sitting around in airport lobbies waiting to do something because they were brought in primarily for public image, for image, for PR, to hand out flyers, to make it look like they were doing something. I can't believe they can't use these guys. The whole thing is just the disaster of the disaster relief on behalf of this administration is just heinous.
Bad, bad business.
So let's come back and we'll talk a little bit more about this. We'll talk about just, you know, why was George Bush so you know complacent? Because it's in his blood. We're going to talk a little bit about his mother when we come back. It's 16 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
No, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey!
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. If you're just tuning in, I'm sorry, our big announcement that we had to make has been postponed till Tuesday. I don't want to get into it again, but it's going to be even bigger as it builds momentum over the weekend. It just had to be. There was official business that was revolving around the big announcement. That had to be done. Tomorrow, please, if you want, you can come down to the new school. We're going to be at the Tishman Auditorium. That's on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. We're going to have Senator Bob Kerrey there, The Daily Show, Stephen Colbert. We're going to have Sarah Jones, the performance artist there. We're going to have all our regular cast of characters. It's going to be good times. Apparently, Dan Pashman, son of Lewis and Linda Pashman of New Jersey, was talking to one of his friends about the new school performance tomorrow and told them that Bob Kerrey was going to be there, Senator Bob Kerrey.
Who?
Like, yeah, they were like, yeah, who else you got? And he said Stephen Colbert. They're like, really? That guy? I love that guy. So they're going to come down for that.
How about Rich Two Bagels?
Is he coming? Oh, yeah, I'm sure he will.
Hey,
yeah.
Man.
What?
I'm sorry to bother you, but your stalker is on the line. This might be a little uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable? What are you talking about? I almost forgot about that guy. What's up, stalker guy?
Hello, Mark Maron. Welcome back.
Oh, no.
Can I speak with Mark Riley, please?
Riley, what are you talking about? I don't get it. Didn't you miss me? Aren't you going to threaten me? Or?
No, Mark Maron. I don't stalk you anymore. I stalk Mark Riley now. Can you put him on?
Hey, look, I don't understand. Just because I was gone for a couple weeks, that's it? It's over between us?
Look, Mark, we had something special, but you messed it up. You left without telling me where you were going, without giving me the opportunity to get a cheap flight so I could follow you, and you know what?
What?
That's just rude. You hurt my feelings, Mark, and now it's over.
But I don't...
You need to move on. Let me speak to Mark Riley now, please, Mark Maron.
Is this true, Riley? He's talking to you now?
Not really. I've loaned him about $200, and we've been to some movies together. That's all. So, yeah, if you call that stalking, I guess he's with me now.
Constant Gardner was good, wasn't it, Mark Ryan?
Yeah, it was pretty good.
A little too much like The Insider, but good.
Oh, no.
So are we still on for Brian Regan at Caroline's on Friday? Then we'll stay, and I'll be your worst nightmare through the Paul Mooney Late Show.
Who? Yeah, sounds good.
I'll pay you back next week, you bastard. Bye now.
See you there.
Tell Mark Maron I said goodbye.
What is that? What is that?
Hey.
So now he's on you?
Yeah, well, I have a feeling he may be on Mooney after we go to Caroline's. I don't know.
Paul Mooney.
Paul Mooney.
Ooh, yeah.
How's you everybody? Like some money?
Hello. Hello, black people. Paul Mooney.
Yeah. You know, he owes me a deuce, though, man. I was going to use that with Johnny. Tomorrow.
We'll have to work it out. So, look, you know, we played this thing yesterday, and a lot of you folks who listen to our show regularly know about this Barbara Bush business where she was walking through the Astrodome like Marie Antoinette and said this amazing thing. But let's hear it again, can we?
Out of the rubbles of Trent Lott's house, this guy lost his entire house, there's going to be a fantastic house, and I'm looking forward to sitting on the porch.
Well, that was actually George Bush. But the logic runs.
Yeah.
Let's hear this because the logic runs right through the family. Let's hear the Barbara Bush here.
And so many of the people in the arenas here, you know, were underprivileged anyway. This is working very well for them.
This is working very well for him. She's walking through the Astrodome where all these displaced people are trying to make do, and she's like, well, look at all the poor people. They seem to be happy. They're eating, and they have cots.
Yeah, you know.
And she's chuckling.
She's chuckling. You know, this was a rationale for racial oppression going back well over a century.
Yeah.
The idea of happy slaves, for example.
Yes, exactly.
You know, they're being taken care of. Everything's okay with them. Look, they're poor. They're black. What?
It's amazing that not only that the attitude persists, but that both Bushes, George Bush and Barbara Bush, are so shameless about it. And the reason we bring this up again is that John Nichols, who's a frequent guest on our show, the writer, writes for The Nation.
Our brother.
Yeah, our brother. How you doing? He's Mr. Brother Guy. How's it going, brother? But he wrote a piece about this, a sort of scathing piece that was on Yahoo. And as of yesterday afternoon, it was the number one story that was being emailed, that was being read on Yahoo. So people are getting aware, waking up to this type of stuff. And I would hope that this would reveal the true nature of the family of this president. It seems to me that George W. Bush has gotten he's gotten away with murder because somehow or another he's convinced working people, regular people, you know, just regular sort of tough love kind of guys and gals, that he's just one of them. He's not. He's just not. He's a member of an American aristocratic family. And this is like his attitude. This was his response, the forward-thinking George Bush, when he heard about the devastation in Mississippi. Let's hear that again, please.
Out of the rubbles of Trent Lott's house, his hat lost his entire house, there's going to be a fantastic house, and I'm looking forward to sitting on the porch.
See, this is like, this is his big sympathy. This is the victim that he's going to identify with, the only sort of self-identified racist, segregationist, borderline Klansman in the Senate is the guy that George Bush is going to say, I'm looking forward to sitting on his porch because he's a victim of this horrible thing. Meanwhile, there are hundreds of thousands of displaced people that can't, you know, that lost everything.
You know, it's amazing. Even his boy Lott has been mildly critical of the federal response here.
Yeah, of Michael Brown. That,
yeah.
Michael Brown, he might actually be the first guy that gets fired ever from this administration as opposed to just quit on his own volition and disappear into the public sector. But I hope so. Yeah, Trent Lott's been critical.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see. You know, everybody says that Michael Chertoff is such a blunt-spoken, plain-spoken guy. He doesn't like to, you know, hear a whole lot of crap. He likes to cut through everything. Well, let's cut to the chase here, Mr. Secretary. What's up with your boy?
They should fire Chertoff, fire Brown. It doesn't need an investigation. It's clear what happened. In a few minutes, we're going to talk to Anthony Romero, the executive director of the ACLU. He's going to be here in the studio to discuss Supreme Court nominee John Roberts and the legacy of William Rehnquist. It's 27 past the hour. Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're going to be doing Morning Sedition Radio Theater in just a few minutes. This is Stones. I'm not going to go see him, though.
On TV tonight, man, but they're at the beginning of a sporting event, so I know you're not going to want to.
Well, no, I've decided that I will not see the Stones without Bill. That's how much of a purist I am. Americans knew that whoever won the White House last November would probably have a major opportunity to reshape the Supreme Court. Now that process is beginning with the nomination of John Roberts and a second vacancy still awaiting a nomination. Our next guest is executive director of the ACLU, an organization which has expressed deep concerns about John Roberts, as many of us have, and the new direction likely to be taken by the Supreme Court. Good morning, Anthony Romero. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. My
Good
pleasure.
Morning.
Good morning, Mark.
Just looking at this guy, just bottom line, just my gut response, just looking at him, he gives me the creeps. He strikes me as a robot. What are your primary concerns in the real world about this guy?
We've got to ask some questions. We've got to make sure that the Senate next week engages in a thorough thrashing of his positions, of his philosophy, of what he meant in certain of the opinions that he was authoring when he was on the federal court or when he was deputy solicitor general. We have to really understand what this man is all about and how he would approach the cases, the Supreme Court, the issues of our time when he becomes Chief Justice.
He has left a lot of evidence. I mean, there was some speculation initially that, you know, we don't really know what he thinks because he was working for this or working for, you know, Reagan or working for, you know, in other capacities. But I think it's pretty clear what he thinks, don't you?
Well, I think many of his positions are pretty clear. I mean, the question is whether or not he, in fact, has changed in his viewpoints.
What are some of the positions that most concern you?
So, for instance, between 89 and 1993, he was Principal Deputy Solicitor General in the Justice Department. He authored briefs while in that post saying that Roe v. Wade should be overruled, supporting graduation prayer at graduations, seeking to criminalize flag burning as a form of political protest. All of those positions were subsequently rejected by the U.S. Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
Those are positions that he stood in the very even in the minority of that conservative court. And so now we've got to ask him to go back to those positions. Does he still think that Roe versus Wade ought to be overruled?
Sure.
Because the American people ought to know what his positions are on Roe versus Wade.
Now, I've seen some conservative, I assume it's conservative, Republican advertising, that makes the argument that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, when she was confirmed by the Senate in a vote, I think it was like 96-3, refused to answer certain questions about positions she had on certain issues. Is that a valid comparison?
I don't think that's a valid comparison. The best I can go back in looking at some of the records and looking at some of the positions of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she was rather clear about how she would approach her role as Associate Justice on the Supreme Court. She was rather clear about certain key positions. When she was a lawyer, she worked, for instance, at the ACLU. She was the director of our Women's Rights Project. It was pretty clear where she stood on issues like women's rights, on reproductive freedom, on choice. All of those questions need to be thoroughly thrashed out. The American public and the Senate ought to have the information before they make up their minds.
I think that's absolutely right. Anthony Romero is our guest. He's executive director of the ACLU. So now, just, I mean, in broad terms, what is at stake for the country if, you know, if we have John Roberts as Supreme Court Justice, and then if this vacancy is filled with another ultra-conservative, the two vacancies, what really happens? Do we all have to convert to Christianity? And I mean, what do you foresee for the future?
You know, I think the ACLU members would put up a good fight on that one. frankly, the concern now of Judge Roberts filling the role of Justice Rehnquist is one where you're really clearly replacing a conservative for a conservative. Justice Rehnquist was always on the conservative side of many of the decisions that we cared about.
Mm-hmm.
What continues to be of enormous concern to many of the advocacy groups, including the ACLU, is then how does that O'Connor seat get filled? Because she, in fact, played a very critical role. She often played a swing vote role in many of these important decisions. And so for us looking forward, I think that how the court gets shaped has a lot to do about who he nominates the second time around.
But why wouldn't he nominate another ultra-conservative?
Because it all matters on how the Senate lets him get off the hook next week.
Well, why would we depend on the Democrats to fight anything at this point?
Well, that's a great question that I'm not in a position to answer here. but frankly, we have to make sure that the senators, and both Democrats and Republicans, engage that process next week. Because if they don't engage it, they don't ask him the questions, the tough questions, if they let him wriggle off the hook, unless they really get into the devil of the details of what his positions are about, it's only going to encourage President Bush to appoint someone else who may not play the moderate role that O'Connor has played.
But now, let's say, for the sake of argument, Anthony Romero, that Robert stonewalls through all this, refuses to answer the questions. Do you think that would be a deal breaker for most Democrats in the Senate?
I don't know. It all depends on how much what happens next week. Many of the political pundits and the people on the Hill, the Beltway, spinmeisters say that it's a done deal, that Roberts is going to get confirmed.
Yeah.
I think it has a lot to do, though, with what happens and how he presents himself, whether or not he answers the questions. Remember when Alberto Gonzalez was up for attorney general, many were calling the fact that was also a done deal and that the Democrats were just going to roll over. There are many more positions that expressed opposition to Alberto Gonzalez in the end because of the way he handled the confirmation hearing.
Is there any chance that John Roberts will break down crying to say, I can't do it?
I repent.
Not likely.
We'll see. That's why I'm going on Monday. I want to be on the front row seat in case that happens.
Now, some people, when Roberts was being considered for the associate justice role before Rehnquist died, There were people that said, well, the best case scenario we can hope for here is that Roberts will turn out to be another Anthony Kennedy, who was, you know, brought to the bench as a conservative but hasn't always ruled that way. Is there any possibility, in your judgment, that that will happen with either Roberts or the other person that Bush nominated?
Look, the thing about the Roberts record, the ACLU hasn't taken a position opposing or supporting Roberts. Or we have raised deep concern. We did a 52-page report that went into all his positions. Some of his positions, frankly, in some of the areas, were reasons to give you some optimism. I'm not trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge, but there are some positions that he's, for instance, he stood for the rights of some welfare recipients. He did serve as a cooperating attorney on an ACLU case.
Yeah, gay rights issue, right?
But, yeah. On another case. I'm not sure if it was on gay rights. He served as a moot court participant.
Okay.
There was a position he took on behalf of Native Hawaiians that was on the right side, frankly. So there is enough speckled in throughout his career that that there are some who say that he'll be a fair-minded, thoughtful Supreme Court justice. Now, that's exactly the level of questions that the Supreme Court's got to get in, that the Senate's got to get into, rather, because we have to really understand how he might approach it.
Well, I hope they do. Our guest is Anthony Romero. He's executive director of the ACLU. Let's move on to the USA Patriot Act. Now, the Senate and the House are going to meet to reconcile their versions of the Patriot Act. There's a lot of things we've got to pay attention to. I guess the primary one is how they are characterizing groups that are legally dissenting as terrorist groups.
Well, what's incredible is that on this case, on exactly this point, we brought a lawsuit almost a year ago on behalf of about 150 groups asking whether the FBI had created dossiers on these organizations. I threw the ACLU's name into the litigation, partly because I was just being a bad boy. I wanted to understand whether or not they were creating a file. We were shocked when we got back from the FBI that, in fact, they had created a file on the ACLU after 9/11 and had collected more than 1,300 pages. Now,
Mark, that's not a file. That's an encyclopedia.
Well, Mark, I can tell you one thing, that the ACLU does nothing to support terrorism. We haven't promoted terrorism. We don't support it. We don't condone it. The whole thing, that the fact that they've created a 1,300-page pile on one of the lawful activities of the premier civil liberties group tells us that something is really amok.
Now, this is
FBI.
Like akin to when Hoover was running things in a way, but he was doing it clandestinely. They were actually doing this legally under the Patriot Act.
Well, I mean, the Patriot Act, a lot of the folks misunderstand what's in the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act is a part of the Bush administration's response on the war on terror.
Uh-huh.
There are some things in the Patriot Act we think have to be fundamentally fixed. I mean, one of the places where we're now arguing, we have this case we just filed last week. It's a case against a provision of the Patriot Act that they called national security letters. It's essentially a self-executing subpoena, which it allows the FBI, law enforcement officials, to, by their own, with no judicial approval at all, seize certain records. In this case, they use this national security letter with no judge signing off on it to get the, now I have to be very careful, and I'll explain this to you, it's Orwellian, that to seize the library and internet records.
I knew it was library stuff.
Of an institution in Connecticut. Now, I can't say any more, because I'm under this gag order under the Patriot Act that prohibits me. If you ask me, well, who is your client? I can't tell you. Well, client do you have? I can't tell you.
Hmm.
Our client, who has a lot to add to the legislative debate right now on the Patriot Act, we're just about to authorize or amend or expand the Patriot Act, is gagged from engaging this public debate. I mean, this is absolutely unbelievable. Now, here you have the House and the Senate with two different versions of the Patriot Act, the House version much worse than the Senate version. The Senate version is much more protective of civil liberties and privacy concerns. Still not perfect, but better. And here you have someone who's the subject of a Patriot Act lawsuit who would love to engage the democratic process, small d, and is banned from doing so because the Patriot Act has this portion of the bill that prohibits him from engaging the public policy debate on this part of the Patriot Act.
Who the hell designed this thing? Who's the the evil genius that would put this in?
John Ashcroft, right? 45 days after the 9/11 attacks, this bill was rammed through Congress. Most members of Congress, even now, will tell you privately they didn't know what was in the bill.
But he must have had a team. Do you know who?
He did. Viet Dinh. He had a whole team. He had a whole Justice Department, for Christ's sake. So he had lots of folks helping draft the Patriot Act. And what was remarkable about the Patriot Act is they didn't just come up with it right in the aftermath of 9/11. They took many of the legislative proposals that were lying on the shelf that we had fought off for years. They slapped the coat of anti-terrorism onto it, and then they rammed it through Congress. And some of the powers in the Patriot Act, let me give you one other one, the sneak and peek provision. This is one of my favorites.
Oh, right? Yeah, that's one that's caused a lot of controversy.
Right, these two, the library records provision, 215 and sneak and peek. Sneak and peek allows them to come into your home, search your personal effects, download information off of your computer, and not notify you about the search until after the fact. Delayed notice search is what we call sneak and peek search.
And they'll probably do that through an email with a password.
So now check this out. Check this out.
Yeah.
So now most people would say, okay, well, it's a matter of terrorism, national security. Why would we want to let the terrorists know that we're going to come into and search their home? Mm-hmm. Why do you want to do knock and announce? Why do you want to do the knock and announce warrant requirement? The fact is that Patriot Act makes that power possible in context above and beyond national security. It ain't limited to terrorism. They can do it in the question of whether or not you fail to pay your taxes on time, whether or not your child support payments are on time, whether you have contraband in your home, whether any and all ordinary run-of-the-mill criminal investigations, they now have the power to invoke the sneak and peek.
So no warrants.
No, a warrant signed by a judge, but they don't have to show it to you. And why do they have to show it to you? That's important, Mark, because sometimes the judge gets it wrong.
Right.
Sometimes they have the wrong name on the warrant.
Right.
Sometimes they have someone else's address on it. Sometimes a wrong judge signs it for a different jurisdiction. And the only way you can assert your right to be left alone is the ability to review a warrant saying, you need to go down the hallway to get this guy, or sorry, sir, you've got my name wrong on this warrant.
So are they using any of these tactics to intimidate opponents in the administration on a regular basis?
You know, what's interesting, there are a lot of tactics that are going on. I mean, first, they always accuse us of being wrong on the facts.
Yeah.
So what's incredible, remember Ashcroft called the librarians hysterical.
Hysterical, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Now, I live in New York. I know a lot of hysterical cab drivers. I know a lot of hysterical doctors. I know a lot of hysterical disc jockeys. Yeah. I have yet to meet a hysterical librarian.
Yes,
and so, you know, he tried to denigrate the criticisms coming from the left and from librarians and from civil liberties groups. And here we are finally with an instance of how the Patriot Act case is being used on library and internet records.
Mm-hmm.
And we're no longer so hysterical.
Mm-hmm. Now, you guys are fighting back against this, the ACLU, because you're producing a series of episodes for television, am I right?
Yeah, we're going to TV, partly because we need to get the story out there. It's great to be here on Air America, but we've got to get the message out more broadly.
And that tonight, it's a new show called the ACLU Freedom Files. It's going to debut on the satellite network Link TV. The 10-part series is a collaboration between the ACLU and Robert Greenwald's Brave New Films. Kicks off tonight with Beyond the Patriot Act. That's at 8 p.m. on the East and West Coast and airs the second Thursday of each month. Anthony Romero, executive director of the ACLU, it's been a pleasure talking
Great,
to you.
My pleasure.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. Thanks
so
a lot.
I guess when we come back, what's the matter,
Riley,
Chris?
I'm sorry, Marin, your stalker, or I'm sorry, Riley's stalker
has
just called back.
All right, go. Well, just put him on hold. Thank you again, Anthony. It was great talking to you. 47 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your vlog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio. Morning Sedition old-time radio players present this installment of Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
This week, Morning Sedition Radio Theater presents The Roast of Mark Maron.
All right, bring it on. I can take it. Roast away.
Mark, I have some bad news. We couldn't get any comedians to show up and roast you, so,
What? Were you kidding me? No one?
None of them wanted to get up this early. But hey, don't worry. We're just going to use some leftover jokes from the Pamela Anderson roast on Comedy Central.
What?
It'll be fine. Don't worry.
But wait,
I'm not going to stand here and say Mark Maron is just a dumb blonde with big boobs. He also has one of the best butts in the business.
That doesn't even make any sense.
We've all seen Mark's video. He said it was the most humiliating, embarrassing thing he ever did. I'm not talking about the one he made with Tommy Lee. I'm talking about barbed wire.
Riley, this is stupid. Come on.
What's the difference between Mark Maron and MTV? More musicians have been on Mark Maron.
All right, that's it. I'm out of here.
Hey, don't you want a rebuttal?
Oh, boy, they sure got his number. This has been The Roast of Mark Maron on Morning Sedition Radio Theater.
Yeah, there you go. 53 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Tomorrow, we are going to be at the Tishman Auditorium on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. That's in the new school. We're going to have Senator Bob Kerry with us. We're going to have The Daily Show, Stephen Colbert. Sarah Jones is going to be there. Big show, man.
Big show.
It's a big auditorium. A lot of people from the new school are probably going to come down. I'm looking forward to it, man.
Yeah.
Riley?
Yeah?
Someone's on the phone who wants to speak with you privately.
Oh, God.
Hello.
It's me, Mark Riley.
Pardon me, man. It's my stalker.
Yeah, fine. He's all yours, buddy.
Mark Riley, I left some stuff over at Mark Maron's apartment. Could you tell him to bring them in so I can pick them up the next time I'm stalking you and not Mark Maron anymore?
Yo, Maron, your ex-stalker's
here. Yeah, I heard it, Riley. I heard it. Fine. I didn't want his stupid stalker mixtape anyways.
Yes. Tell Mark Maron I'll be wanting that back, and my coupon pouch, and my Tasty Delight punch card. One more punch and a small frozen yogurt is free, which is what you are, Mark Maron. Free, because you don't have a stalker anymore. You broke my heart.
Oh, man.
Wow.
Why is it getting so weird in here? Why is it so weird? You broke my heart.
That sounds like Fredo from Godfather 2. Oh,
you broke my heart.
Fredo, you broke my heart.
Then the kiss of death.
Yeah.
The kiss. So, folks, I know a lot of you expecting a big announcement today. That announcement has been postponed till Tuesday, and this was not part of the announcement process. This was honestly hung up in a bureaucratic quagmire downtown in terms of vetting and presenting the announcement properly because it's that big.
Well, yeah, it's bigger than we thought it was, and it's so big that we have to wait till Tuesday to bring it to the peak of bigness.
Oh, man, this show's going right down the toilet. Here we go. I hate to be a wet blanket here, but hurricane season is not over, folks.
Oh, no.
Apparently, Florida is preparing for a bit of a storm. Tropical storm season is still upon us. Tropical storm Ophelia is off the coast of Florida, along with Nate near Bermuda. And Hurricane Maria petering out over the North Atlantic is now a tropical storm. That's scary, man, that nature has the power that it does and that the government doesn't have the power that it should.
That it should, yeah. And Ophelia, by the way, is creeping along just off the coast of Florida near Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. Now, Jacksonville has been spared the previous six summer hurricanes, but apparently not this time.
I'd like to welcome hostage Roy Hallams back to the world.
Yes.
of freedom. The U.S. military, acting on a tip, raided an isolated farmhouse outside of Baghdad on Tuesday and rescued this guy. He was an American, been held hostage for 10 months. Apparently he was in good condition. He's getting some medical care, and the kidnappers escaped on that one. God, that must be just horrendous and harrowing experience. I can't even imagine that one, Riley.
Yeah, I can't imagine it either. I hope that he gets all the help he can in putting his life back together.
Here's an interesting bit of politics and goodwill. Sunni religious leaders have called on their followers to donate blood for Shia victims of the stampede that killed more than 1,110 people last week. Imams in Fallujah have been using loudspeaker systems during prayer time in mosques to call on people to make donations. This is a very interesting thing because there's usually so much tension between these two, and this is the Sunnis who are now out of power, making this bit of goodwill, which also has a little political loadedness.
It has some political undertones, but I got to tell you, it may be a baby step, and I do mean a baby step, toward a unified Iraq, maybe?
That would be something. So now when we come back, we're going to have Bruce Cherry's going to come in and pitch us one of his new ideas. Do we want calls for that? Yeah. So
yeah.
What is the number? 303-866-2270.
Yeah.
That's all kinds of wrong.
Yeah, it is. What's the matter with me? 6 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yep.
Good morning, folks. Got to apologize to you if you've been listening to a while for me for to a while. I'm a little jangled today for some reason. I couldn't quite pull it all together, but it's coming around, man. It's coming around. Tomorrow I'm not going to be jangled, Riley, because we're going to be doing our live broadcast from the Tishman Auditorium at the New School. I wanted to remind people right now, if you want to call in, some of you big fans of the Bruce Cherry is going to pitch us a comedy bit. Bruce is one of our comedy writers and has been really wanting to be on the air, and he's going to pitch in a minute. So 866-303-2270 is our number if you want to give immediate feedback of Bruce's pitch, which we'll get into in a second. But tomorrow, Senator Bob Kerrey, former Senator Bob Kerrey, will be with us, and The Daily Show's Stephen Colbert will be with us. Performance artist Sarah Jones is going to be there as well. It's the old theater where they used to do the Actors Studio, the Inside the Actors Studio thing. It's right there at the New School. It's at Tishman Auditorium. Come on down 6th Avenue. It's 12th Street just east of 6th Avenue. Tomorrow from 6 to 9. Oh, man. The major announcement that we were going to have yesterday has been postponed because it needs to get bigger.
It doesn't need to get bigger, Mark. It's huge already.
It's big.
The corporate types here at the network couldn't handle how big it was.
Those guys are kind of sort of like, hey, what's going on at the network? Anything new? No, I'm just kind of doing what I got to do. They're good guys, the corporate guys.
Yeah. Wonderful people.
There's like,
wow, you guys are kissing some ass, huh?
There's 50
8 o'clock, man.
There's 50 of them down there. There's like a new corporate guy down there every day. It's like, hey, I'm Joe. How are you, Joe? What do you do here? I'm president. And then they go into an office. And then they say, you're doing a good job, Al. I'm Mark. All right. But you've got glasses. I just thought maybe you were. Anyway, thanks for being here. As many of you know, I'm going to do this right now, the big intro. Are you ready, Bruce, Brendan?
Everybody, we are.
You,
yeah, yeah.
You brought Brendan in here. It's going to be, it's got to be big. One of our writers. Bruce Cherry has been trying to get a regular character on the show. So far, he's pitched us Bernard the Credulous Pirate, Corky Throat, and we're not even going to bring up Shenanigans the Clown, because that was just...
I've had a lot of positive feedback from people on the street. I want to mention that. People come up
street.
People come up to me, and they say how much they like the pirate or the clown was one of them.
Let's be honest. They haven't really worked out, Bruce. But you're still trying. That's what I appreciate. And let's welcome back... What? Do you want me to keep
going?
Right. Let's welcome back writer Bruce Cherry for Bruce Cherry's Pitch of the Week.
This is gold, okay? Okay. You love the environment, I know that, and I try to work in topical things.
Environmental issues are important.
We start talking about the environment,
okay,
and each week it gets interrupted by a phone call from a thylacine. You got a question immediately, right? If you're as intellectually curious as I think you are, what is a thylacine?
Yeah.
It's all right here. And okay. I worked up a script this time, and we're going to do it. Now, here's what would happen. You're talking environment.
So I got to do a script? All right, go ahead.
Brendan rushes
all right.
in.
All right. Yeah. You want me to just read
Let's hit it.
Am I going to read? Now I'm reading two? I'm reading
yeah.
two?
All right.
Phone call from a thylacine.
Okay, right. Got it.
Mark, there's a call I think you should take on this environment stuff.
Okay, sure thing. Hello, caller. You're on the air. Excuse me, I can't understand you.
Oh, my God, Mark. I think it's a thylacine.
A thylo? Who's a what's a?
I love making you say that.
He says he is a thylacine. Thylacines are dog-like carnivores,
carnivorous marsupials.
Sorry, Bruce, there's a typo there. They're dog-like carnivorous marsupials, sometimes called Tasmanian tigers, but everyone thought they were extinct.
But Brendan, how can you understand him?
When I was a kid, my neighbors had a wombat.
Okay.
Okay, note, that didn't quite make sense, but we just bleep over that, right?
Perhaps the thylacine can explain. He says thylacines were hunted to extinction in the early 20th century by farmers and ranchers. He says that the last one died in a Tasmanian zoo in 1936, but there have been unconfirmed sightings over the years.
He said all that?
That's a joke. You have the one little thing with it. That's very funny. And then it actually said too much for it to have actually said that. Yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah, it's great.
Mark, you have more lines.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. And I take this phone call means he survived.
He He says yes.
See, and then note, that was the funny part. That's whenever I go on for like 45 seconds, it's like one word and vice versa.
Okay,
but a boom, you got your humor worked in there.
So you want me to go back to the script?
Please.
All right. So he's related to dogs and wolves?
He says not at all. He looks very similar, but he's a marsupial, totally unrelated to placental mammals.
Placental, but...
Okay. Rah-rah-rah revolution?
No, parallel evolution, Mark. He's an example of how completely different species evolve almost identical traits under similar conditions.
Rah-rah-rah revolution? Rucking loser.
Mark, let me just say on my own that Bruce's bit is brilliant.
Uh-huh.
We can use thylacine as a springboard to lambast not only conservatives' misguided environmental policies, but also their harebrained ideas on evolution. And it's wickedly funny.
Did you just read that?
Let's move on.
All right, so how's this this surviving thylacine calling us?
Randrine.
Landline?
No, he's calling from a landline, Mark. He can't have a cell phone. He's almost extinct.
All right. I don't see how an almost extinct carnivorous marsupial can have a landline, but not a cell phone. I'm sorry, I'm screwing up the script. I don't see how an almost extinct carnivorous marsupial can have a landline, but not a cell phone. Big chunks of this bit don't make sense.
He says neither does our stewardship of the Earth.
And then there's a pregnant pause, because that's always the kicker.
Right.
Boom.
And then I say, wow, heavy stuff. We'll be right back.
Yeah, because if you don't, it just kind of hangs there.
Oh, my God.
At the end, it just comes into this, like, boom, it makes a point.
No, Bruce. Bruce.
No, it makes a beautiful, you want to save the Earth, and I'm doing this with this. And you know what? Right now, all over America, the people listening to this are running to their computers and Googling thylacines.
Well,
they're going to see these cute little critters.
So you're saying people are learning?
Yes.
It's 866-303-2270.
Laugh and learn.
If you want to have some feedback, we got a call right now.
Uh-oh.
Who is it? Hello, how are you?
Hi there.
Yeah, what do you think of Bruce's bit?
Yeah, can I get a job for my kid, my 4-year-old? I mean, you know, if you're putting this up, I know I'm from Iowa,
not
a cultural mecca or anything,
yeah.
But yeah, he puts, you know, sometimes he comes out with shorts on his head, that's funny.
Can we do that on the radio?
I think we could describe it, it'd be funny.
I think it would carry better, yeah.
All right, well, thanks, Bruce.
Obviously, this guy was set up. This is a plant.
No, it was a plant.
From Iowa? Yeah. If you were going to make up a state, it would be Iowa.
Would you put your shorts on your head? Maybe that would make this bit funny.
Well, there goes next week's pitch.
Oh. All right, so this isn't working out, Bruce. I don't think that this bit's going to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you don't like the thylacine, they just rediscovered that woodpecker in Arkansas.
Oh, my God. Okay. What is it with you and the weird?
Instead of a phone call, it's Morse code.
No, it's not going to happen.
No.
It's not going to happen, Bruce. It's not going to happen, man.
Fucking loser.
All right. So we'll get Bruce back to the drawing board.
Yeah, close. Right close.
Oh, we are punchy today.
Right on the edge, yo.
So, pretty soon we're going to be talking to a guy who spent a lot of time in Antarctica and wrote a book about it. We've also got Future Mark coming up. So stay here. It's 14 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Hi, this is Phil Lesh from the Grateful Dead. One time, I was listening to Morning Sedition and Marin started riffing on the Bush administration. Then Riley came in with a slamming groove about the right wing's use of the media. Just when you thought it couldn't get any freakier, Marin broke into Scarlet Begonias. What a sick jam. Best show ever. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Mark Maron with Mark Riley.
Morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. Tomorrow we're going to be at the New School on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue, at the Tishman Auditorium with Senator Bob Kerry, who is president of the New School. Also the Daily Show, Stephen Colbert, Sarah Jones will be there, all the regular characters. We still got Bruce Cherry here in the room. Yes. He's just pitched his bit about the thylacine. Is that what it was?
That was it, yes.
It's very interesting. And you stayed around because there was a word that there might be someone on the phone that actually liked what you did. Rochelle in New York, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Did you like Bruce Cherry's bit?
I thought it was genius. It's educational and entertaining.
In your face.
Wow.
Wow.
This is the kind of thing I get on the street when I...
What street?
People come up to me.
Are you familiar...
152nd Street?
Are you familiar with Bruce, Rochelle?
Does he look like a Russian peasant woman?
He does look like a Russian peasant woman, except with sideburns.
Yeah, she, obviously.
No.
Now you're having your friends call up, Bruce?
Wow. You know what? I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
Maybe I... This was not prompted.
Uh-huh.
People that...
All right, well, thanks for your... Thank you. What Bruce is an improvisational wizard. But he is a genius. Thanks for your call, Rochelle. I think you are a genius, and it's very nice for you to have your friends call up and say good things about you.
This was not set up.
Yeah.
Sure.
Is she still there? Tell him.
No,
she's gone.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. Well, I can tell you.
Yeah. Thanks, Bruce. It was nice seeing you. Go come up with some other funny things. And I'm a big fan of your work, and I love you very much, and I like the sideburns.
Shut up, Mark.
Hey, man.
Yeah.
Future Mark's on line one.
Oh, great. I love that guy. Put him through.
Hey, buddy, what's up? Well, I'm just heading over to one of my properties.
One of my properties? That sounds good. What are you, like a landlord or something?
Well, it's a lot bigger than that, buddy. I'm going to give you some advice right up front this time. Invest in the underground.
What do you mean? Like independent films, music, stuff like that?
No, man. I mean literally invest underground. Like under the ground, dude, below the earth's surface. Get me?
I'm going to need a little more here.
It shouldn't be a big surprise that all the oil fields dried up and it left these huge empty spaces underground. And with all the pollution above ground, it was only natural that everything would start moving down here. You get it? I got in early. It was dirt cheap.
Yeah? So you're underground right now?
Yeah, I'm heading to the mansion on my subterranean mushroom plantation.
You're a mushroom farmer?
Yes, among other things.
Hey, dude, what's that noise?
Ah, it's my Digmaster Sport Cruiser. It's a tunneler. Hyundai makes it. Runs on darkness. Yeah, it's kind of a whole twist on the solar thing.
Okay, wait. So you invested in these caverns and you farm mushrooms.
Oh, yeah, and I have storage facilities. People park their boats and trailers down here. Without the whole sun thing, I've made a lot of money. On tanning centers, nail salons, frozen yogurt places. I make every donut in the world. I own a chain of $99 stores, where everything's $99.
Wait a minute. Back up. I sort of get the other ones, but did you say you make every donut in the world?
Yeah.
Well, what if someone tries to make a donut?
They don't, all right? They just don't.
Well, I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around this donut thing.
Let it go, Mark. It's just a fact, okay? It just is.
Well, wait. What about other things from the donut family, like cinnamon buns? Do you make those?
Look, Mark, drop it. It's just a fact. I make every donut in the world.
But why do they have to be made underground?
Dude, you ask me one more donut question, I'm hanging out. Get out of the way!
Whoa, what happened?
I just hit a giant earthworm, you bastard. Of course, I just washed my digger this morning. Crap.
Giant earthworms?
Yeah, pesky bastards. They try to eat my moles.
What the hell is that?
Those are my moles, Mark. It's sort of a rich man's hobby. For a few years now, I've been breeding singing moles.
Dude, this is getting really weird.
They're good, though, aren't they? Bravo, that was fantastic. Very good. Encore!
You go a little crazy underground, I guess.
Just because I love my singing moles, I'm crazy?
Yeah, you just said the words, just because I love my singing moles, I'm crazy. Dude, get some rest, okay?
Yeah, sure, okay. Hit it, boys!
Oh, man.
What is that all about? You make every donut in the world?
Yeah, really.
I can't wait to be Future Mark. I'll tell you that right now. In just a few minutes, have you ever had the thought, hey, you know what? I'm just going to move to Antarctica. We got a guy that did that. He's this guy, Nicholas Johnson. He wrote this book called Big Dead Place, Inside the Strange and Menacing World of Antarctica. We're going to talk to him in a few minutes. I actually have had that. Where I thought it would be just, it makes complete sense. That is literally the edge of the world, the end of the world.
Too cold, man.
Yeah, too cold. I don't even think about coldness. I just think about solitude.
You'll freeze to death if you don't think about cold.
No, actually, you don't if you don't think about it. It's when you do think about it that you freak out and freeze.
No, it's the pinnacle of cold, that you can't get more cold.
Yeah. I understand, but it's white and it's quiet. It's just out of this. Whoa. Like,
whoa. You can move to certain parts of Brooklyn for that.
Shit. Hey! Yes. Yeah, okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, that was good. That was definitely good. Well, we'll ask him how cold it is and whether or not that was that hampered his experience.
How cold
up there.
Is it, Mark?
It's freezing, according to you. It's the coldest place in the world, Chris. Hey, you know, can I just give some people some help here? Apparently, after the tsunami, like, there were hundreds of fake websites that people were donating money to, and they were cons, they were scams, and I don't want that to happen to you, because there are some websites out there now around the Katrina disaster that are asking for money that are not legitimate. Some of them have names like Katrina Donations. Some of them have names like Katrina Families, ParishDonations.com, KatrinaFamilies.com, Katrina Donations. Some of these are actually linked to a white supremacist site, of all things. But the FBI counted like 2,300 websites dealing with Katrina. Some of them legit, some of them aren't. Some of them are legit, but aren't legit. Like, I wouldn't give to Pat Robertson's Operation Blessings if I were a good progressive, as some of you are. But look, private donors should avoid giving personal data to any organization seeking disaster aid. These include, like, social security numbers, dates of birth, bank account information. Watch out for names of organizations that are similar to those of well-known organizations like Red Shield, like you know what I'm saying, instead of Red Cross, like dummy donate here, don't go to that one. Don't respond to solicitations thanking you for past donations. Be skeptical. If you don't remember giving, don't give again, because it's a scam. In general, but just don't give to any intermediary organizations that say they will make donations for you. Don't give to organizations that require a fee for charitable services, like locating a family member. Avoid giving to websites that, in general, don't give to websites that end in .com. Most nonprofit organizations use .org. If you have any questions around this stuff, you can go to sites www.charitywatch.org, and or you can go to www.charitynavigator.org to check the credibility of a charity website. You know, I've never been ripped off like that, but it's very easy to, because some of these scam artists make websites that look identical to either the Red Cross or to any charitable organization. Looks familiar to you.
Oh, yeah. They move real fast, too. They grab a domain name, and next thing you know, they're off and running.
With your money.
Yep.
Nicholas Johnson, he's going to call us about his experience in Antarctica. His book, Big Dead Place, is out. I'm definitely curious about what one does in Antarctica for a good time. So stay with us to hear that. 27 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yep.
Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Come on down tomorrow. We'll be at the New School, the Tishman Auditorium on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue, from 6 to 9 in the morning, doing our show live. We're going to have the Daily Show, Stephen Colbert, there. We're going to have ex-former Senator Bob Kerry, now President of the New School. We're going to have Sarah Jones there, the performance artist, and all our regular cats and giveaways and whatnot. Looking forward to seeing you. Come on down.
Take lots of pictures. I'm not going to be there.
Okay. You're going to be here, though?
Yes.
Running the thing?
Yes.
We'll also make our big announcement next Tuesday, because it just got bigger.
Yeah.
We had to postpone the big announcement. We're actually teasing the tease. Kind of, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
Here we go. Sorry, I just had a little. The City Bakery came, and thank God. I'm talking to Pashman, like, you know, why don't you help me out? And you're going down for coffee. Get some coffee. He's like, I already went. And he'd just sit there and let me yell and scream like a baby. And then he comes in with the two trays full of fruit and baked goods. And I'm like, oh, yay, they lied to me and I'm an idiot. All right, here we go. Why would anybody voluntarily go work in Antarctica? That's a good question, but I thought about it myself. Just to think, you know what I mean? We're joined on the phone from Vancouver, British Columbia, by the author of Big Dead Place, Inside the Strange and Menacing World of Antarctica. Please welcome to the show, Nicholas Johnson. Good morning, Nicholas.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Morning.
Pretty good. How long, and first of all, why'd you go to Antarctica?
I'd just been laid off from doom.com, and I was looking either as an office manager in some other doom.com or going to Antarctica.
Really? Those were the only two options you had there?
Yeah, it seemed like it at the time, and so I chose the latter.
You just went to Antarctica?
Yeah.
How long did you stay there?
I've been going back and forth since 98, so I've done 5 summers and 2 winters.
Wow. So that's interesting. You're sort of like, what are you doing this summer? I'm going to Antarctica.
Yeah.
So what did you do up there? What was your job?
I started in the dish room scrubbing pots. And
at the resort up there?
No, it's at the it's a kind of resort, kind of a work gulag resort.
Really?
Gulag resort.
And then I moved into garbage, which was a step up from the dish room. And then since then, I've pretty much been an equipment operator, moving snow and grooming runways and stuff like that.
What kind of facility was it exactly? What do they do up there?
Well, overtly, it's a they call them science stations, but there's about, you know, less than 20% of the people are actually scientists. It's mostly just a camp so that we can. All the staff there is just maintaining the stations, which in, you know, 50 or 100 years will be useful to us geopolitically.
Wait, because we're going to have to move there?
We'll probably have to move there, yeah, and there's a whole huge deposits of oil and stuff down there, but we can't get our hands on it yet.
Nick, now you talk about the work that you did. Did you meet a lot of people who kind of go back and forth as you did, you know, spend some summers there, spend some winters there?
Oh, yeah, there's a whole culture of contract workers. People ask each other, you know, are you going down this winter? No, I'm not going down this winter. We're going down next summer. Different contracts. And then people actually gravitate towards moving to, like, there's people now who work in Greenland. Some people are going to Greenland. Some people are going to Iraq. It's kind of a whole culture of contract workers that you get into.
Oh, so it's
money around the globe, really.
Okay, so it's not, but you didn't find any people who just sort of, like, love Antarctica?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Almost everyone falls in love with it, or they hate it and leave immediately.
Because it seems to me that it's such a specific type of place that, you know, I've actually thought about myself, because I'm not going to be like a child. My favorite animal is a polar bear. And I've often thought of just going out and hanging out with polar bears. Did you do that at all?
Yeah, you'd want to go to the North Pole probably with that one.
Oh, there's no polar bears?
Dream, so.
No polar bears up there in Antarctica?
No natives either.
What about, is there any penguins or anything?
There's penguins, yeah. yeah, there's penguins.
So do you hang...
I know a guy who kidnapped one once and put it in his buddy's bed when he was drunk, and it kind of just squawked and made a mess before.
Lot of drink in there, huh, Nick?
Yeah, there's a little bit of drinking. I'd say there is. Yeah.
What else you do for fun, man? Putting a penguin in a guy's bed—that's good times.
Yeah.
What are some fun stories from the Antarctica Wild Nights?
Let's see, the Wild Nights. There's the time that the guys had the adult diaper sent down. Everyone stood around drinking beer and wetting themselves.
Wow, you guys know how to have.
Wait a minute.
Good
wait,
time.
Wait, wait. Hold up. You do this in weather that's how cold?
Well. You know, inside it's warm, but it might not feel like it when you got a wet diaper on.
I would think.
Let me just understand something. So you just you got bored and you're like, what are we going to do? Let's pee in our pants. That was.
Yeah, that kind of stuff happens. Yeah.
Yeah. No female companionship up there, Nick?
Oh, yeah, there's chicks.
are they called ice chicks?
Some people have ice wives.
Oh, yeah. Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah, it's a wife that is only you know, there temporarily while you're on the ice, and then you have your other wife back home.
I guess we're not going to mention names here.
Yes.
Yeah. So do you have an ice wife?
You know, I'll hook up with a nice girl every summer or so. Yeah.
Are they all attractive out there?
Oh, they're all awesome. They're all in dirty overalls. Tough women, yeah.
Oh, tough women.
Yeah.
Oh, man. They do the Depends thing too, do they?
Yeah.
I actually wasn't there for that one, but I don't know.
Well, look, Nicholas Johnson. Let me just tell people who we're talking to so they don't sort of freak out and go, "What's going on?" is the author of Big Dead Place, Inside the Strange and Menacing World of Antarctica. He spent many summers up there. Now, what about living situations? Because we were talking before that it's freezing. I mean, it's way below freezing. And I get this idea in my head that you guys are living in, like, igloos or in bank. Where do you live? What does it look like?
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought too. I thought I'd be living in an igloo and killing seals and, you know, or pulling sleds.
Killing seals.
Killing seals. He's not talking. You weren't talking about clubbing baby seals. This is Air America. We don't want to throw it all down the toilet.
You gotta eat.
So more Native American way, going out and killing seals for food.
Yeah, but there's none of that. It's like these institutional dorms that are very comfortable and often too warm inside. There's an ice machine down the hall. There's pool tables, foosball, laundry machines.
So it's college.
Yeah, it's very, very much like a college dorm, really.
Now, Nick, how do you, here in the Northeast, we get cold, during the wintertime, but you're talking about exponentially colder in Antarctica, I would imagine. How do you dress?
Yeah, for example, like the boot, just the boots alone have air valves on them, which I'd never seen until I went down there.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
They're these huge white boots that there's an air valve that you open up, air comes in and creates an extra layer of insulation.
Okay.
And then you close it and, that air stays a little bit warmer, so it keeps the foot warm. I've never seen anything like that besides in Antarctica. And then there's insulated Carhartt overalls that you wear, long underwear, and then, fleeces on top of that. So you're dressing in, five layers, and then you got all manner of sort of, neck gear and face gear and parkas, and people design their own face gear sometimes. You have 1,000 pieces of clothing, and that's actually the main that's the hardest part about cold weather, is just the tiresomeness of taking on and taking off and putting on clothing, really.
Now, Nick, you said that there's an ice machine. Why would you need an ice machine? You can just walk outside
for the drinks.
Scoop it outside from the snow.
That's salt water, though, isn't it? No, it's snow.
All the stuff outside has fuel in it.
Oh, it's just dirty. It's dirty ice.
Dirty ice.
So Nick, you went up there, you just went up, this is all a big surprise to you. The first summer you went, were you like some sort of Antarctica virgin? Like you had to be taken through some sort of rituals to learn all this stuff?
I think that hazing stuff is gone since the military, so there's nothing like that.
So no, just regular guys sitting around peeing themselves and putting penguins in beds. No more hazing, thank God, because that would get weird. All right, Nick. I wish you the best of luck with the book. It's Big Dead Place, Inside the Strange and Menacing World of Antarctica. It was great talking to you, Nicholas Johnson.
Thanks, Nick.
Thanks, guys.
All right, take it easy. So that happened.
Wow.
As Chris will press to us. Why are we so giddy? It's not even Friday. It's ridiculous.
Coldplay concerts, alarms that don't work.
So maybe we should do...
Cold and Menacing World of Antarctica. It was college. It was college dorms. They were peeing themselves in diapers.
I know.
They were clumping baby seals.
They weren't.
They weren't.
That was hilarious. First of all, it's like in my head, because I'm a little sensitive to it. First he says chick, and I'm like, oh, great. Here we go. Here come the emails, And then it's like, I thought he'd be up there killing seals.
Oh, up there. It's down there. It's the most down you could ever get.
Maybe you don't know where my head's at. Do you know what I mean? Maybe you shouldn't be so judgmental. Do you understand? We're at Air America. Maybe it's down to you, but maybe to me, in my heart, in my mind, the poetry of Antarctica is up there. Okay,
just like the office is upstairs, right?
It is. I think I've gotten over that, haven't I?
Yeah,
I haven't done that in a while.
You have done.
But I think about the first year, I always said we were going upstairs to the office, and it's downstairs. What's your name again? The guy working the board? 44 past the hour, we'll come back and do something interesting and important. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Hi, this is Lawton Smalls, Morning Sedition's Planet Bush Bureau Chief. Remember, you can't spell Lawton without W. Deal with it. You're listening to Mark and Mark on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Let's land this thing. It's 49 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, as I've been saying all day, we'll be at the new school, the Tishman Auditorium on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. We're going to have Senator Bob Kerry there. We're going to have the Daily Show's Stephen Colbert will be with us. It's in the same auditorium that once housed the Inside the Actor Studio program. James Lipton will not be there. He will not be there. I wish he would be there, but apparently there's a little tension somewhere. I'm not going to cause any tension right now. Let's get into a little bit of news before we talk to Dan Pashman about football.
Yeah.
It's weird. He's in here wearing a helmet.
and shoulder pads, Mark.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I had those when I was a kid. You know, I didn't know why I had them, but I think I had them because my neighbor had them. But before we get into that, Mayor Ray Nagin ordered law officers in the military late Tuesday to evacuate all holdouts down there in New Orleans by force if necessary. As of today, there have been no forceful evacuations. Most people are going. Some people are still holding up in their homes, but many of them don't want to go because they're afraid that if they come back, they won't have any property, and there seems to be at least some understanding on the ground as to that. But it is a safety issue. The first government test confirmed one Wednesday that the amount of sewage-related bacteria in the floodwaters down there is at least 10 times higher than the acceptable safety levels, or levels that you would expect to come out of your faucet or find in your hamburger.
Yes.
What else you got there, Riley?
Well, you know, because of this standing water and the amount of bacteria, the chief of the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, warns stragglers not to even touch this water. Don't put your foot in it. Don't put your hand on it. It really is, in fact, that toxic. Now, little by little, they are, in fact, pumping out New Orleans, and the cleanup is just starting to begin. But I think Mayor Nagin, because there is this fear that more people could die simply by being there,
yeah,
he's ordered people out by force. A lot of people who stayed until the order are now leaving voluntarily. That's probably why you're not hearing about a great number of forcible evictions. People are saying, you know, I really don't want to leave, but they're going.
Some of that water is flammable. It's explosive. It's not only polluted, it's explosive, flammable, polluted sewage.
Yeah, you try and light a cigarette around it, you're going to start a whole
because there's natural gas leaking all over the place.
Yeah.
On the good side, yesterday, Democratic members of Congress, Gerald Nadler, John Conyers, Mel Watt, Sheila Jackson Lee, the good folks, announced that they will introduce legislation to protect thousands of families and small businesses, you know, that have been, displaced or destroyed in the aftermath of Katrina. They're going to introduce some legislation that will hopefully be an amendment or somehow to a loophole in the Bankruptcy Abuse Prevention and Consumer Protection Act of 2005, which is some evil Republican legislation that goes into effect October 17th, which would make it almost impossible for anybody to declare personal bankruptcy. So they're looking to find some, you know, alternate legislation that will at least provide people down there a window of opportunity to get back on their feet.
Well, yeah, and, you know, the question of what's going to happen to the real estate down there is a very open one. You know, people might still get foreclosed on. People might end up losing their homes, not just because they were destroyed. They may end up losing the land underneath them under certain circumstances.
And I would even go as far to speculate as I think that, you know, George Bush, you know, according to what he said, you know, last week in Mississippi, in terms of like, hey, just look forward to how great it's going to look when it's done, is actually, you know, looking forward on some level to a new New Orleans in terms of, you know, finally, we were speculating about that the other
yesterday,
day,
yeah,
that there is a demonic undertone to some policy. Into some, you know, people in this country who think that because New Orleans is now a clean slate, they can finally make it a wealthy city by, you know, putting up expensive condos and whatnot.
Well, yeah, and you know, New Orleans has a lot of charm. It draws huge numbers of tourists. It is ripe for the kind of gentrification that we've seen happen all over the country, and in many instances, the poor are displaced forever.
Right. So Dan Pashman is sitting in here in his shoulder pads and in his helmet. What's going on? So football, I'm an idiot.
It is a great day. Do we have the music, Chris?
There it is.
There it is. Oh, yes.
The football season started.
Welcome to the frozen tundra of America. Today's opening night football season. The season starts in earnest this Sunday,
yeah,
Mark. But we have opening night tonight. The Oakland Raiders, Mark Riley's team.
That's right. The season starts tonight.
They'll be taking on the world champion New England Patriots. I'm going over to my friend Adam's place to watch the game. And it's very exciting. This Sunday, I'll be in the parking lot of Giants Stadium preparing for the Giants-Cardinals game.
Are you really?
4:15 kickoff. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The whole Pashman family will be there. We got friends coming. We got about...
I feel like this family does everything together. It's weird.
We got a 15-person... We have a 12 to 15-person tailgate in the parking lot. I've had drunken salami marinating for 2 weeks in preparation for this day.
What's wrong with you people?
Marinating salami for 2 weeks?
Yeah, that's on the short side.
And the whole family goes... See, this is where if anyone accuses this of being a boys' club or some sort of macho unit that we do here in the morning, I don't relate to this at all.
Yeah.
I don't understand what the hell you're talking about.
Mark was picked last in all sports, I think. Is that correct,
well,
Mark?
I could hit a ball. I don't make my life out of it. I mean, you're almost 30, aren't you?
Yeah.
What are you doing? So are you going to go
Mark, the majority of Americans are with me on this issue. The majority of Americans are excited about football season. Oh. I'm like Cindy Sheehan to your George W. Bush.
Is that what's going on? Gee, I thought you were an individual, Dan, who thought for himself. But I guess not. Just
well, that's not split hairs. Yeah.
Well, yeah, have fun tonight. And be careful, because I know I called you last night at 7:30. You're already half drunk.
Half in the bag.
He was.
I slept it off.
Yeah, yeah, you did? That was hilarious.
I was in bed a half hour.
I just wanted to call to complain about something. He's like, why? Hello? did I wake you up? All right, look, for those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning's Edition Cliff Notes. The government is sending seized designer fashion clothes to victims of Hurricane Katrina. The bad thing about designer clothes is you sweep in them for a few weeks and they're out of style. It's going to go to hell again.
Oh, yeah.
Scientists say ecstasy users are more prone to disease. Paradoxically, while ecstasy decreases your immunity to colds, it increases your immunity to melody and lyrics. Theater lovers in Afghanistan are enjoying their first taste of Shakespeare. Of course, Shakespeare is to be adapted to Muslim culture. For instance, in an upcoming version of The Taming of the Shrew, the taming consists of a severe stoning and subsequent clitorectomy. Oh, boy. Observers say people in Afghanistan relate to Shakespeare so well because in much of the country, it's still 1599.
Oh,
today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. So Cheney's finally going to Louisiana, huh? Wake up, sheeple. The alligators will leave him alone out of professional courtesy. All right, that's the Cliff Notes for today. Tomorrow, again, we'll be at the new school.
Because he knows you're going to be harvesting those mushrooms in hell.
Yeah, that's right. I'm still laughing about the clitoris.
Yes, that's hilarious stuff. Can we put it in context, please? Anyway, we'll be at the new school tomorrow with Bob Perry. That's at the Fishman Auditorium on 12th Street, just east of 6th Avenue. We're going to have the Daily Show, Stephen Colbert. As I said, Bob Perry, Mark and I will be there, all the characters.
All the characters will be there. And the big announcement will be on Tuesday. Don't forget that either. It's Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.